Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. Absolute honor, as always, that you have decided to join us on the Industrial Talk Podcast, because this podcast is a celebration of you, the women of men of industry, the women of men of manufacturing, and everything in between. You are bold and you are brave. You dare greatly. You innovate like nobody's business. You're making my life and lives around the world better. Thank you very much. And that's why we celebrate you here. In the Industrial Talk hot seat, we've got a gentleman by the name of Kevin Clark. Fluke Reliability is the company. We're going to be talking about digitizing condition monitoring. And he knows what he's talking about. I'm telling you right now, he knows exactly what we're talking about. All right, let's get cracking. Yep. Now, I've interviewed Kevin before. He knows his stuff. Brings mad street cred when it comes to all of the stuff about reliability, knowing what to do, how to approach it, how to get the greatest bang for the buck. If you are an company and you're looking to figure out what to do from a reliability perspective, you might have something, it's culture, whatever it might be, and you're looking for a solution, or you're looking for help, or you're looking for insight, if you're just looking for somebody to connect with, I'll tell you right now, Kevin Clark is the man. Put that down. I'm telling you right now, put that down. All right, let's get a paper and pencil out. Paper, because you need this. You need to participate in this particular conference, Accelerate, and that's spelled Accelerate 20. Go out there. It is a virtual conference. It is November 17th through November 19th, and it's going to be featuring some top individuals, top talent, insightful, innovative professionals in the world of industry, in the world of manufacturing, in the world of reliability, leading big time, leading, leading, leading. All right. So go out there. Fluke Reliability is putting it on. Accelerate 20, November 17th through November 19th. Do not miss. Don't come to me and say, Scott, I wish I didn't. I wish I had participated, but I just didn't have it in my time. You have the time. You do. And Kevin Clark is going to be speaking there, as well as Blair Frazier, as well as Susan Greenman, as Jeff Hay, Klaus Blake. You've heard them on this interview. You've heard them on this podcast. They are absolute rock stars. All right. Let's look at what we've got going. Now, one of the things that I'm always fascinated with, and this is where Kevin really does a great job, is We're inundated with a lot of information about Industry 4.0, data, how do we make our business better, stronger, faster. That's a Steve Austin reference if you're checking that out. And where do I go? What do I do first? How do I get the greatest bang for the buck? I mean, you can get really distracted by all of the shiny objects out there when it pertains to reliability, when it pertains to IoT, IIoT, all of the terms that are in the Industry 4.0 lexicon. But what I found and what I've distilled it down to are a couple of things. One, it's always a people and culture that achieve success, right? You know, if you have a team that's all on board and it's great and all that wonderful stuff, and you have a great culture that supports it, the likelihood of a successful implementation just dramatically improves. The other thing that I've just realized, I've always realized it, but you're going to have to seek out, if you're looking for answers, if you're looking to collaborate with the right people, Kevin Clark is definitely, and his team at Fluke Reliability, that's who you want to reach out to. They know exactly what to do, and they have a history to prove it. That's right. So that's who's in the hot seat. All right, Kevin Clark, Vice President, Accelix, A-C-C-E-L-I-X, is in the hot seat. We're going to be talking about digitizing condition monitoring. He's got 3 points out there, some of the roadblocks, And we had a great conversation. He's pretty talented gent. All right, enjoy the conversation. All right, Kevin Clark, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. I was excited about this interview. And we've been, listeners, we've been talking, I don't know, it seems like 2 hours we've been talking before we got this podcast rolling because he's that engaging. Kevin, how are you doing?
Doing great, Scott. Thanks for having me.
I am. I'm pretty excited, man. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, all right. I've got it down on my notes and I'm going, all right, I'm going to be talking to Kevin. He's with Fluke. You know, anyway, for the listeners out there, let's get a little 411 on who Kevin is, because you got a mad stat card out there on LinkedIn. And now you're saying to yourself, Scott, his name is Kevin Clark. You know how many Kevin Clarks are out there? Yeah, there are a lot.
Yeah. A lot.
Just comma. Slap in Fluke, you're good to go, and you'll find him that way. So give us a background there, Kevin.
Well, to be honest, Scott, there's a lot of Kevin Clarks out there that are in asset management, so it makes it pretty interesting when you're trying to find the right one. I'll take credit for all the good stuff out there on all the Kevin Clarks. The negative stuff, I'll
those are the other Kevin Clarks.
That's that other guy with a different middle name.
They spell Clark with a K.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Put that E on the end or whatever it is. But
right. Give us a little background.
Yeah. So for me, I've been in the business for over 30 years. Started out in maintenance, turning wrenches. And so I've lived it, spent a decade doing that. Went back to college, got some education. And some people might say it messed up my career at that point. Others might say it helped my career. I'm still undecided. But
yeah, I'm looking at your stat card. I'm telling you, I mean, if you're turning the wrench, you've been there, done that. You've got the gravitas. You've got the street cred to say, yeah, I know where we're doing. That's important.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I grew up on the farm. So that also helps me only fix it when I need to fix it. Right. And it's so you don't crack it open unless it's broke.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes that's hard to get out of your head, and there's reasons why you would. But anyway, I worked really hard going back to college to get out of maintenance, and that didn't work. So failure there. It's kind of like that car, you know, that, you know, is out of alignment driving down the road and it keeps pulling you towards the ditch. Yeah. Ditch being maintenance. So it kept pulling me back.
I'm sorry for laughing hard. My parents had a car that just did that. And I remember telling them, going, can you get this? This thing's kicking my tail. I'm worn out after you driving your car because it wants to go off.
Yeah, right.
It's pulling me to death.
It's kind of what my career did. But somehow, some way, I ended up in SCADA system software. Wow. But it ended up, after a few years of doing manufacturing, SCADA systems, ended up doing more maintenance, collecting data for maintenance systems, then deploying maintenance systems around the world for Johnson & Johnson, and got deeper into the mobile technologies and that. But it was always towards asset management and asset health, and we just didn't call it that then. And so we were fighting hard for technologies, and I went through those years. I even had a vice president that I was trying to get capital appropriation dollars for mobile technology. It was only $50,000. It wasn't like a huge project. It was just for a single site. And, right. And so it was $50,000. And I bumped into him in the hallway one day, and he goes, hey, I signed your appropriation for your toys. That was 20 years ago. He called my mobile devices my toys. And I think today, we wouldn't call them toys. So, you know, I've gone through those iterations. I've gone through those iterations in my career of automation and asset management. And we're now at a point, you know, kind of a culmination, where I even had an opportunity to go back and pull one of my old legacy systems out and replace it with today's technology. So I've had the ability or the luxury of going back and calling one of my systems legacy. And that's a little tough to take at times. But
I was going to say, great. Legacy system. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But here's the funny thing that
finally I ended up.
No, I was going to say you're a trailblazer when it comes to this. I mean, you've seen it. You started when the communication was around, I think we could do a better job at managing these pieces of equipment. I don't even know if they were even called assets. It was like that pump, that motor, that whatever. We can do a better job. We don't have to sit there and be reactionary. What can we do to be a little bit more predictive in a sense.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, when you start thinking about, think about the technology that I was dealing with back then, it was good technology, but it was hard, right? So it wasn't as easy as it is today to just connect an old asset to a system. And so the return on investment just wasn't there. I don't care how hard we worked and how fluffed up we made that return on investment. It really wasn't there. The only way you could really justify it was if you were in a regulated industry or something where you had to have the data.
Yeah.
Then it was much easier to justify, and the return on investment didn't have to be as strong. You could base it off the criticality of the asset, and then, you know, you could pretty much buy anything you need to. But today, the return on investment is there. I don't care if it's a highly critical asset or starting to get into your low criticality assets. Your technology is a viable option today.
Yeah, it's the price point, but it's a level of sophistication that exists on these devices. It was weird, Kevin. It's like, I understand exactly that the capital outlay, the justification for doing something on a critical asset. So you had to, okay, it's going to cost X to dig the ditch, and I got to hardwire it. I got to plug it in. I got to figure it out. And it's going to be just, where do I store the data? Everything was just a big deal for a piece of equipment. But now all of a sudden it's like, nah, we've solved the, storage problem. It's a cloud. It's there. It's all ready to go. We've solved
it's right
the price, and we just don't have to worry about drawing a dig in a ditch to get the wire connected to that asset. It's all wireless.
It's there.
It's just like, boom, all of a sudden.
You know, a little bit more history, Scott, and you relate to this as well, is that I was one of those guys that was responsible for creating data silos. So I created those along with a whole bunch of others. We created those. And back then we thought it was the right thing to do was to build that data up into, and we didn't call it a silo at that point, but we thought it was connectable. But then, you know, later when we tried to connect them, it was really hard. And we're now backtracking, figuring out how connecting silos.
And after you get the data, I know there are nuggets in there. I know they're gold.
Yeah.
You know, stuff in there. I've got to mine it some way, shape, or form. But how do I do that? It's a data tsunami. What do I do?
Yeah,
the trailblazers. So you guys kept at it.
Yeah. You know, and I. Yes, we kept at it, and I think we kept deploying systems over and over and over, and I think the repetition of deploying systems has taught us an awful lot about why it was wrong. I think some of the things that are messing with us these days are versions. So when we have to upgrade a version, it could cost us literally millions of dollars just to upgrade to the next version. You know, but when you get on your smartphone and you want to upgrade your version of an app on your smartphone, it could be a matter of seconds or minutes, and it's upgraded and it's generally free.
Yeah,
and so we're dealing with that. Yeah, we're dealing with that over here in our personal stuff, but over here in business, for some reason we have these major version changes and it costs millions of dollars.
Yes.
And so I think we're trying to find, you know, that common ground in there. How do we start to get away from the versions and the big dollars associated to it, make it make sense to how we work with apps these days.
And it just happens. It just happens, right? And I get up, I go to my facility, and it's just, boom, hey, check it out. I got a new version here. Okay. And nothing really, I mean, I don't get interrupted in my workflow and what I'm trying to do and what I'm focused on. It just happened magically. And I think that's a powerful value proposition, which then brings us in a segue of the topic that I would love to be able to begin to expand upon. And that's the digitalizing of condition monitoring, because we've already, you know, we established the fact that you were a trailblazer and you were doing everything that you can. And now we're at a point where it's digitalizing that condition monitoring and that process. What does that mean?
So digitalizing condition monitoring isn't new. So that's one thing that we need to make clear. We've been digitalizing condition monitoring for a very long time.
Hard word to constantly just sort of roll off the tongue.
It is. And it's not really a word that I prefer to use, but you have to, in order to separate from what we were doing in the past. And you know, digitalizing and moving your organization to something that's less manual and more automated is really all digitalization is. And using the technology that's readily accessible to us on the market. And so we're going to be talking about it specifically in the condition monitoring space. Digitalization is going on all over the world. In the condition monitoring space, we're a bit behind. We set up an awful lot of barriers, an awful lot of roadblocks that really slow us down in order to do that. And in some cases, we overanalyze and we really, you know, take a look at it from a perspective of dollars and cents rather than how do I get the most data that I can possibly get that adds value to my process.
But that's an interesting, I've had this conversation a number of times. So you can get data. There's never any issue with getting data. It's the getting it's getting the right data that you can analyze that makes tactical decisions. And it's like an artist when you're painting a picture. When do you pull back and stop and say, I got it? It's like the same thing with data. It's like, I got it. I've got a great set of data that I like and it makes me make better decisions. But there's never a stop to that, right? It's like I'm constantly looking for more data, make my decision. And it's like, isn't there a sort of a drop-off, an incremental drop-off of value?
Yeah, there definitely is. And back to that term that we talked about earlier, asset health.
Yeah.
And so the example I can give there is anybody who goes to a doctor these days, I don't care if it's out in the middle of Indiana, out in the middle of nowhere, that doctor is typically going to have an iPad and they're going to be looking at your stats, the information, your past stats. Yeah. They're going to be looking at the stats that he just collected from you today. And he's going to be able to make an assessment of how well you're doing from a physical standpoint. What's interesting is he's taking that, or let's say the app that he's working with is taking that information and it's comparing it to an expected norm based on my age, based on my physique, based on a whole bunch of things, right?
History, genetic, whatever.
Heartbeat, you know, whatever, all of that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then the expected norms. Yeah. What's no different than what we're doing with assets these days, where we're collecting information. Maybe there's a heavy amount of vibration that's coming off that asset. Maybe there's temperature swings that can happen on that asset. And when you start collecting that information, especially from a historical standpoint, an expected norm starts to show up. And it's something that we just never had before. And I don't know about you, but you know, I kind of get excited about weird stuff when it comes to like condition monitoring. But when you take it, let's say an old piece of equipment that might've been originally manufactured in the 70s.
Yeah.
Never had the ability to tell any technician how it's feeling ever. So it's just a standalone machine that
spinning,
is
whatever.
Yeah. Out there. It's been doing its job for the last 50 years. And it's not been able to tell its story
right. One
bit. And then all of a sudden you go and you sensor it up and you put vibration sensors on it and temperature and, maybe some ultrasound or ultraviolet, technologies. And all of a sudden that asset begins to speak.
Yeah.
And it begins to tell us something about it. And that is just the coolest thing that all of a sudden I can tell how that asset is performing. I can see its peaks and its valleys. I can, and it starts to correlate with how it's producing product, whether it's putting out good product, not so good product, so when you start seeing those things, it's a pretty exciting thing. And if it's been operating for 50 years and we've never had anything digital on it, it's probably a fairly non-critical asset to begin with.
Right.
Right. And we're seeing more of that too, where we're starting to put technology on even non-critical assets that really have something to say and are important to the business.
Because you're starting to correlate and you're just seeing a different view, a different palette of opportunities of decisions that are out there. The other thing that's interesting, back in the old days, to be able to sort of censor something up, that required a lot of effort. And it wasn't a broad brush. It was like, hey, that's a critical asset. Mm-hmm. That's important to us. We better put something out on it that gives us some sort of data so that we know that it's working, whatever the reason was, but that's an important decision. But nowadays, because one of the things is what you put out there is technology is caught up with expectations. Technology gives me the ability to be able to do that and do it mm-hmm. with a sense of cost effectiveness. But the sophistication of that data is brilliant. It's like, I can do that.
Yeah. You know, and that data exists in a lot of systems out there already, right? Just sitting there waiting to be used. Just sitting there. But you know, I love the sophistication conversation too, because, you know, the fun thing that we haven't been able to do in the last, let's say, 10 years, prior to 10 years, I mean, is looking at technologies that allow us to go with a battery in a sensor rather than having to power it.
Yeah.
And not just a battery in these sensors, but then the next level, which, you know, you'll see on our product list here pretty soon, is battery-less sensors that are doing, they're utilizing technology like energy harvesting. So powering itself off the vibration of the asset.
Check that out.
You're starting to see some really cool stuff come out. And then also you're starting to see technologies that are allowing us to communicate wirelessly from that sensor 300 yards away in the same sensor that has no battery. And I mean, the level of sophistication coming with this technology is just amazing.
See, this is okay. Here's the connection. This is a disconnect that I see. What you're talking about, that gives me old little butterflies in your old tummy, right? Because I think mm-hmm. that's cool stuff. I think that is truly an innovative approach, especially today, that companies need to really start to embrace. But me, company, different hat, let's just say, I've got a whole lot of other stuff that I'm thinking about. And for me to think about this particular topic, although very important, is very difficult. And it's very difficult because it's like, I got to learn this. There's a learning curve that I've got to. Is that a challenge that you're facing right out there?
Yes and no. You know, the funny thing is, Scott, now that we bring this up, the expectation of IoT is that's the expectation. All this crazy technology that's really kind of coming into its own right. That's kind of the expectation that, you know, most clients out there, when we just talk to them about just regular condition monitoring and, you know, digitalization, they're like, yeah, I know. I know all that stuff. Right.
Well, that's interesting.
But when you start talking about this energy harvesting and, you know, and wireless
notes,
wireless technology that can go clear across the facility and still require no energy, you know, that's the kind of things that, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I thought IoT was, is crazy, crazy. Like you start thinking about RPA, you know, robotic process automation, the stuff that's going on behind the scenes, the ability to utilize AI so that it can magically do things that we either can't do or don't want to do as people.
Right.
That's what they really envision IoT as. Hmm. And the unfortunate part about that is there's an awful lot of foundational building in condition monitoring that needs to happen. In other words, your infrastructure needs to be capable of doing that.
Yes, yeah.
Right. So going in and doing an assessment and understanding where all that data comes from, how it's collected, and that strategy still needs to be built.
Yeah.
So the cool stuff can only come once you've figured out where your company is and the strategy that you have for the technology.
See, I like that. But that came with the messaging, right? I remember when people started talking about IoT, you know, which is sort of an Internet of Things, industrial Internet of Things, IIoT. Yeah. But when they started having that conversation, there was a lot of hype. Mm. And maybe it was, I guess, wrongly placed maybe at that time, but there was a lot of hype, and that hype was like, the manufacturing facility of the future, and we're not going to have, it's just going to happen, and we're going to get produced our widgets, but we still have to have people involved.
Yeah, Right. Lights out manufacturing, future manufacturing, all of those things. You know, we were doing lights out manufacturing back in the 80s, but we did it horribly. we never really succeeded at it. And, you know, we thought that we could just automate a facility and walk away.
Walk away.
Yeah, that would be cool. And I think we learned over the last 30 years or so that we couldn't do that. And nor did was it the fact that we couldn't do it. We didn't really want to do it, right? And so I like Industry 4.0 because Industry 4.0 says that we're going to start deploying technologies and then we're going to work with those technologies. But what they're saying Industry 5.0 looks like is that the advancements that we're going to make in 4.0 of people and technology figuring out how we can work together, Industry 5.0 is like the exclamation point of technology and people working together.
And as my ears bleed as a result of Industry 5.0, But okay, so let's just say all of the stuff that you've said, Kevin, fantastic. I'm all in. I'm a guy that likes this. I eat this stuff up. What are the roadblocks? What's real world? What are roadblocks?
Well, I said I wasn't going to say it on the call, but I'm going to say it. It's most of it is us, right? So I actually do a presentation. I did it at IBM's IoT conference, and I talked an awful lot about what are the barriers to technology deployment? And even what are the barriers to a successful pilot in IoT? And the number one is me, right? And the way that I think about things, because I'm still victim to this, even though all the things that I've gone through, I'm still victim to it because 20 years ago, I tried something and it failed miserably.
Yeah.
And that 20 years still sticks in my head that I tried that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it again. Right. And I think a lot of people go through that. That's how you get set up with opinions that are wrong.
Yeah.
Or misguided. And in 20 years, technology has gone, you know, crazy numbers of, I don't know how to express the difference in technology 20 years ago versus technology.
I had a Commodore 34 or whatever, 32 or 64 right. or whatever it might be to now, you know? Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we are the biggest barrier to advancing technology. And you and I talked about it earlier that technology only advances as fast as people accept it, fast as people adopt it.
What's interesting is the fact that technology's here. You can resist, you can push back, you can do whatever you want. But the reality is that I believe, and this is just my opinion, my humble opinion, I'm not in the trenches like you are, that companies who begin to truly address that, address the people component, address the culture component, and begin to embrace technology and just recognize that it's happening are in better shape, let's say resiliency-wise going forward, because they're starting to, I get it. I got to do it. Yeah, it's painful here, but I'm going to do it anyway and not have any preconceived notions of that last IoT project 20 years ago or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the pandemic is driving us towards thinking differently.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we did talk about this a little bit earlier too, that you know, the pandemic, shame on us if we didn't go after the technology that we should have gone after that we were fully capable of going after and could have helped our company, whatever company that might be, could have helped us survive the pandemic better because we deployed that technology.
Yeah.
So shame on us if we didn't do that. Then there's the rest of the companies that maybe they weren't quite ready. Maybe they didn't have the funding for it. Maybe a whole bunch of things. But I think the pandemic itself has really promoted the awareness of technology and how technology helps us not just survive a pandemic, but also helps us to work remotely. Because I'm seeing all these companies that are coming back and saying, okay, now it's okay to work at home. Hundreds of thousands of people possibly in these companies like Microsoft and Google and, you know, these huge companies that it wasn't okay 6 months ago to work from home. And now all of a sudden, it's like, okay, so now it's okay to just work at home. And it's the technology has not grown that much in 6 months to make that, you know, big proclamation. Yeah. It was the pandemic that said, okay, we know that the technology was where it needed to be, but we were just refusing to change. And so here we are.
There you go. Right there. Yeah. People example right there. And then all of a sudden now it's like, yeah, I roll out of bed and I just go to the computer. I fire it up. I'm in a meeting and I'm cranking away and I'm still in my, you know, messed up hair and I'm cranking away. It's just been an interesting transition, that human element that's trans. Yeah, I think you're spot on. Okay. Before we wrap it up, I've got to have this question. We're talking Fluke reliability here. We're talking about a company that has a portfolio of like Prooftechnik, eMaint, and Fluke Connect, and you're Excellix. And I'm looking at this sort of flow diagram of what it's all about. Can you explain to me and the listeners of Industrial Talk a little bit about Excellix and how you interact with Prooftechnik, eMaint, and Fluke Connect?
Yeah. Well, you know, we sent you the diagram that's really hard to understand, right? That's the one we sent to you.
Hey, it is what it is. It's right there. And I'm reading it.
Yeah.
Talk to us.
So, and based on our conversation earlier too, you know, complexity is just there. So just because the technology is advanced doesn't mean the complexity left. We're just building the complexity on the backside and we're putting the user experience on the front side.
Yeah.
And so it feels very user friendly, feels very, I hate to use the word easy, but it feels very easy to use.
Hold it. I'm going to jump in here, Kevin, real quick. It is easy. And the reason it's easy because you have the experience of other legacy systems that were not easy.
Sure.
your perspective is accurate. I've been there and it's like, you can do that now. Oh my gosh. Yeah. When we did it was like this, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when, you know, they used that term, pushing the easy button or, what was the other one? I can't remember what the other one was.
I like the one that says, we're going to just take this system off the shelf. We're not going to customize it.
Right.
Everybody
customized. Yeah. And then that leads me back to the conversation about versioning, right?
Yeah. So
I can't upgrade because I customize too much.
Yeah. And that's exactly, it is. Yeah. It's just there. Been there, done that. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, let me explain Excellix a little bit. Yeah. So Excellix, when we originally came out with the Excellix concept, it was more of an umbrella idea. So everything underneath of that was condition monitoring, you know, 3-4 years ago, fell underneath of the term Excellix. So that we can kind of have one explanation of all the different things we're doing. And what we're doing at Fluke is pretty extensive when it comes to products. So we go all the way from sensors on the plant floor up into systems that collect data, diagnose like in Fluke Connect, and then we connect into systems like EAM.
Yeah.
And so it was pretty complex. So Excellix kind of lessened the complexity of explaining all that, but not really. It's still fairly complex. But with the new breakdown and re-envisioning ourselves as Fluke reliability in the business, including Prooftechnik, including eMaint, including Fluke Connect and all of that. What we did was Excellix has morphed into a IoT platform.
Yeah.
Which now connects all of those things, begins to connect the things in Prooftechnik, which is laser alignment and online condition monitoring and sensors themselves. And then we have eMaint, which is fully connected into Excellix. And also connecting now because of Excellix into Prooftechnik. And then you got the same thing with Fluke Connect that connects into Excellix. You've got other products out there called Connect Assets, which connects directly to PLCs on the plant floor and that all connected back into Excellix. So what you're seeing is everything that we offer ties into Excellix and can be a single connection to somebody else's IoT platform. So all of that data becomes available to other platforms that they may be instead of having to individually go back and connect to each of those systems, they connect to one and they have access to everything, right?
So it's really it's a facilitator of connectivity. I mean, you're just able with the Excelix. That is your connected platform that I can say, yep. And the power behind of what we're talking about here is truly a connected system, so that nothing sort of falls through the cracks and nothing just sort of is out there as an outlier, right? Yeah. We're pulling it in. We're creating a really valuable picture of that asset on a real-time basis. You're not even looking behind you. You're not saying, oh, I wish I knew that 2 weeks ago. Nope. It's right there, right now. Yeah. And that's what Excelix does, and I like that. And it connects all this other stuff, and is it agnostic? Is it agnostic?
Yeah, it's very agnostic, and that's the intent. And it's a little bit different these days, Scott. You know, it used to be, show me the money, and we'll connect it.
Yeah.
And so today, it's different, right? If it makes sense to connect to it, we go connect to it, and before the clients are asking for it. Of course, we're not going to connect it if it doesn't make sense, but still we do it before the clients are asking for it. And because the clients need it, we know that it's going to continue to grow in this space where we just want to be connected. And I don't want to connect 5 different times for different applications. I just want to connect once. And once I'm connected, then I can pick and choose I want.
That's a whole nother story too. This whole connected thing. I love it. Yeah. I love that model. I love the fact that you can do that. Kevin, we're going to have to wrap it up. You are an absolute rock star. I always enjoy talking to you. There's just so much out there.
Well, I appreciate it, Scott, and you're always fun to talk to.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. I blush. What the heck?
Yeah.
All right. A couple of things. One thing that you've got to remember as a result of this conversation, everybody, is that if you're sort of lollygagging and trying to tip your toes into Industry 4.0, stop it, because Industry 5.0 is right around the corner, and you better get going and you better do it. And you got to just embrace it. Don't sit there and whine about the whole thing. Connect with people like Kevin Clark and the wonderful people at Fluke Reliability. Get some more information. I'm sure they want to talk to you. You're going to be, with that said, we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to wrap it up on the other side. You're going to have all the contact information to get a hold of Kevin Clark. Yeah, you're going to say, it's Kevin Clark. Nope, I'll give the right link so there's no excuse. All right, listeners, stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
Wow, I truly enjoyed that conversation with Kevin Clark. Talk about an innovative thinker. Everybody, and I'm telling you, everybody at Fluke Reliability is an innovative thinker. They love to collaborate. They definitely share their education, their knowledge, because they're dedicated to your success. Again, I want you to put this down on your calendar. It's Accelerate 20, right? Accelerate 20. Make sure that you put an X in front of that. And it is November 17th through November 19th. It's featuring the best in reliability, the best that Fluke and hit their network of professionals can provide, right? Go out to Accelerate 20. Find out more. Do not be shy. And do not come to me and say, Scott, I can't do it. Don't. You need to listen to it. All right. I'm going to continue to challenge. Be bold, be brave, dare greatly, because those individuals are changing the world. Hang out with individuals that are bold, brave, and dare greatly. You can go out to industrialtalk.com. You can reach out to me. I want to be able to be a part of your network. So thank you very much. We've got another great interview right around the corner. So stay tuned. Do not go away. We will be back with another interview.